All right, so taking a look at the news first, I don't know if you guys are aware of a little site called Security Focus, I think it is. They run BugTrack. So we'll take a quick look through their recent stuff and as soon as I can find the right link. Hold on a second. Complete archive at securityfocus.com if anyone wants to follow along with me. And what we've got, there's a few things that aren't particularly interesting. Photodex, ProShow, Producer, Color, Pick, Proc, Memory Corruption. Oh boy. Hue was an interesting one. I noticed this morning. It's for a product I'm not actually familiar with, but it's OpenConnect. At least I don't think it is. Yeah, so it looks like OpenConnect is. I think it's a VPN, but I'd have to look it up. I guess I didn't read this one this morning. At any rate, this just allows you to. Okay, yeah, so this is to allow you to access VPN. Sorry. So this, it says that you can use a malicious VPN gateway, so in other words, a compromised VPN server,
What's VPN?
virtual private network. Does that explain it to you? Do you have any clue what it is after that point?
A virtual private network. So, I mean,
You remember we talked about tunnels? We've talked about tunnels before? All right, so
not SSH.
what a VPN, it is not SSH. SSH is
I
like
have
a baby
VPNs or
VPN.
SSH, but I said SSH is it is a version of a tunnel.
It
It's a
can be
wide
used
tunnel.
as a tunnel.
It's
It's
a
not straight
logical
up.
network.
Well, it's more than just that because a good VPN, but starting with the basics, it allows you to tunnel traffic to other computers as though they were on a local network.
Okay.
So you can be across the internet. Like I've got a, I don't have it set up yet, but I'll have it set up again soon at home, a VPN,
Okay.
and I'd be able to connect from UAH. And then I just it encrypts all the traffic, but it's like my laptop or my tablet is actually on my home network.
Okay.
So anyway, this is specifically a Debian advisory, so the solution is just upgrade your Debian package. Boy, apparently all the hackers come out. Oh, that makes sense. We've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 vulnerabilities today. 9 vulnerabilities today. That's more than I've seen since I started looking at this site. Apparently all the hackers get lonely on Valentine's Day.
Wait, on your website, usually?
What?
Which website are you talking about?
Security Focus.
But it said 8,
They
9,
found
5.
exploits. That's how many exploits
Yeah,
they found.
there have been a lot of security vulnerabilities that occurred today, like more than if you go back, it normally happens in a day. So let's see if there's anything else. There was, let's see what this one is. TP-Link. See, I checked this morning, but I didn't check it this afternoon. They've had a lot since then. Here's a nasty one. It's a little device called TP-Link TLWA71N, which, if I had to bet, I would guess is a router. So they've got, it looks like, two different firmwares that are vulnerable to this. It's got a whole bunch of different vulnerabilities, but it allows you to do directory traversal, which just means that you can go to different directories within the device. It says here you could, for instance, read the password or shadow files. And you're able to do this over a HTTP request, so that's a big deal because that means I can connect to one of those routers with my browser and download sensitive files that way and be able to compromise it. Apparently it's got a cross-site scripting problem. So yeah, there's a number of things in here. This one, apparently, whoever made this, whoever makes TP-Link, maybe we shouldn't be buying from them. Okay, vendor is TP-Link. Yeah, so watch out for TP-Link, guys. HP site security SOAP issues. Remote code execution. Those are always fun. You guys know what remote code execution means?
You mean when you enter like JavaScript code in console or console?
Well, in the sense that you can remotely run it. Well, not really. No. It's when I, as an attacker, can run code on a victim machine. So let's see. What are they doing here? Okay, so there's a site scope SOAP feature. SOAP is, let's see if I can remember what that is.
That's a server-based
It's, I believe, a form
server
of.
side, it's server side processing code.
So it stands for Simple Object Access Processing. It's not server side, and I was pretty sure that. What it is, it's a. It looks to me anyway like it's a network communications
Sharing.
protocol, basically. Yeah, because
Okay.
it's Simple Access Protocol. We can take a quick look at it. I guess I could project, except then I'd have to move my whole setup. Where almost everybody has a laptop. But you aren't pulling it up.
Same website again.
Securityfocus.com. You'll have to go to the archives.
It's a $40 to $36 ad.
So SOAP is just building up off of HTTP. So it's basically what I thought. They compare it to. They don't compare it to. They say it relies on XML and it also is used on top of other application layer protocols. Specifically, it tends to use apparently HTTP and SMTP, which is the mail sending protocol. So that allows for some sort of remote execution of code, it looks like, which is really nasty. Gee, what a shock. So apparently Slackware with Pigeon has a bit of a problem. Never heard of Sonic Wall Scrutinizer, so I'll skip that. Seriously? It's an IM client. It's a good IM client because you can use the OTR plugin. We'll talk about that in the future. I figure on having a meeting on GPG for email encryption and OTR for IM encryption.
So why did they implement IRC?
Why did they? What? IRC is not a mailing client.
It sends messages
from the person. IRC is basically a chat program protocol. IRC is basically the original chat protocol. It's a lot of people still use it, but it doesn't have some of the features as like Google Talk has or something like that.
Scrutinizer software apparently is also part of Dell or a Dell product.
Here's a big one. Here's a Samba vulnerability. Samba, by the way, is the Linux implementation of the SMB protocol. SMB is the protocol that allows you to do file transfer between Windows machines.
Right.
So let's see what this does. Oh, I read this one this morning. This one, apparently the web administration tool. So this was just the web administration tool. So comparatively speaking, this isn't actually that big of a deal. But at any rate, if you've got the web administration tool to administer like Samba shares on your computer, this allows for some different clickjacking and cross-site attacks. So that's not a good thing, but it's not nearly as end of the world as like a remote code exploit on that's usable and more stuff. So let's see about simple password obfuscation in Enterprise Architect. Okay, here we go. Here's my favorite. You guys remember my cryptography presentation? I told you that I would be actually ashamed of you if I found out that you used XOR encryption on a product. So here we go. Here is a product. This is, like I said, something Enterprise Architect, which, okay, it's on a Spark system, which is probably running Solaris, so almost nobody uses it anymore. Well, that's not perfectly true, but anyway. So this says, when using server-based repositories in Enterprise Architect, the user account information is stored in the database table t_secuser column. Password contains the user password, G, who would have thought? And this is in an obfuscated format. The content is obfuscated only by XORing with the ASCII code of E17030402158, rather than using, say, a hash. So at any rate, assuming you're capable of decoding an XOR encryption, which pretty much anybody who wants to can, totally gone. So the way, if anyone's wondering, you'd break that, if I remember correctly, the easiest way to do that would be to change your password, take it, and XOR those two passwords together, the original and the new one, and that should retrieve the key for you.
Like the original pad that they XORed it with?
Well, no, you would make your first password, right? Retrieve that from the database. Make a second password. Retrieve that from the database. XOR them together. That should give you the key they used. The E17030402158. So at any rate, yeah, that's... Well, for the few people who are probably using that.
Ordinary end users may be detained from gaining access to that database using the encrypt connection setting feature. At least SQL admins may still read the T underscore SID user table and are therefore able to decode the passwords.
Here's an exciting one, guys.
Solaris servers?
Fewer and fewer. It's totally out of production. 100%.
Did they get taken by Sun?
They were always Sun. Sun got bought by Oracle. Oracle doesn't care about Solaris. Yeah, I don't know for sure. You'd have to look it up, but I don't think Solaris. Well, and honestly, it shouldn't. Solaris is not really a very good operating system. I am unfortunate enough to have had to compile some code on Solaris. It was awful. Their compiler has bugs. It's like compiling something on one of these machines here that we have. I won't go into details because this might go online. And I don't really want to help anyone hack UH. Anyway, so here's an interesting one because this is entitled Atmel Secure Crypto Coprocessor Series Microprocessors, the AT91SAM7XC, are leaking keys. Now that's interesting because generally when you have hardware like that,
it's specifically designed.
It's pretty good. So at any rate, this says that this Atmel processor, it contains a crypto coprocessor, obviously. It's capable of both DES and AES. Why you would bother supporting DES?
The bonus DES fire pack.
I was going to get to that. Jeez.
Because some people like DES.
Yes, but they shouldn't. I've already explained to you. DES is not more flexible than AES. It's slow to use triple DES. No. No. Get that one out of your head. Keep it out of your head. Don't use DES.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but you were thinking about it. I saw that look in your eyes. Like, I can be contrarian again. Yeah, is what you do. I know you.
I saw that little bionic
laser playing kind of girl crossing. Something in the world actually cares about
that. Yeah, and you know who those people are? They're the people who are unfortunate enough. They're unfortunate enough to still be on old machines that do not have AES hardware support. So it is, in their case, faster to use triple DES. For everybody else, use AES. At any rate, it says that due to poor memory management, under certain circumstances, you can recover the crypto keys from a live system using the JTAG interface. These are actually made more likely to exist in the wild because the example software provided by Atmel is vulnerable. Figures. Oh, at any rate, here, this is interesting because there was a reply to it. Sorry. It does mention that the example code is not actually vulnerable, but it's apparent. It sounds like it's a really subtle thing. So it's still, because they're not clear about how they did it, and because it's a really subtle variable thing, it sounds to me like it's still pretty easy to misinterpret the...
But they knew about this.
Of course they did.
Because it says it's been raised within the court, within MTEL, several times over the years, dating back to at least 2006.
That's absolutely...
Wrote this personally, raised it in 2009.
Well, and this is exactly why good security from the beginning is important. Because what you want to do is you want to make sure that your hardware, especially hardware, but honestly, if you've got a big software project as well, you don't want to have to go redo everything. You want to do it right the first time. I agree. But once you've got the manufacturing plant set up, you don't want to have to change that. That's really expensive. So this is why security should be done from the beginning. This is in case anyone was wondering, this is why I want to start doing the news, is because it really teaches you a bit about why it matters so much. Once I've made that hardware, once I've got it set up for mass production, it is very expensive for me to change that setup. Right. I will lose money.
This is an ML problem, and that's the reason why it's such a big deal, is because it's a hardware problem. It's not a software problem.
Yeah.
You can't fix that.
Well, they can, but not without replacing chips, which they're not going to do. So, and technically it is, it's a mixture. It results from software problems as well. So it's hardware made worse by software. Hardware alone doesn't do it, but when you program on it wrong, then it's a problem. At any rate, the same thing though applies to large software products. Once I've spent thousands of dollars, maybe even millions of dollars developing a software product, and it's taken me 3 years, if fundamental things are wrong as far as security goes, oh well, I'm not going to go back and change it. Not until somebody calls me on it or I get sued. It's really expensive.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take a look at this one. The Linksys WAG200G routers. It says multiple vulnerabilities. So let's see what we've got. command injection. That's always wonderful. So that basically is probably remote a remote code execution, although it may not be. It may be you have to have physical access to it. But it says here that you can exploit input validation that's missing on the timer interval parameter. So this is a buffer overflow attack, and it can be used to execute arbitrary commands. So this is not a remote exploit, but what happens is if I can do a buffer overflow on this, then I can then install a backdoor. And we've talked about backdoors, and I think everybody was here for that, so I won't go into detail on those again. So anyway, yeah, you either have to be authenticated to the device, or you have to find other methods to get into it. So, that's a big deal. Looks like there are not cross-site, but more validation issues. So one of the things we've got coming up is a buffer overflow presentation, and one of the major things that happens is somebody doesn't check their input when they do it, and they run something that they shouldn't, and somebody gets in. I think I'll talk about one more of these. And the reason why I'll talk about this is because it's one of my old favorites. Vulnerabilities in Java. Now, this is OpenJDK, which is not as bad for it as Oracle is. Oracle has errors or problems all the time. But Java in general has problems. So let's see. Oh, this is just a packet update. Yeah, this is OpenJDK. It looks like they've got an update. So they talk a little. Oh, they talk a lot about this. It had data sanitization problems over a remote method. RMI, I've already forgotten what that expands to. They added logging content. That's really not such a big thing. So, you know, there's a lot of different things. This is just a package update.
But this was an update? What part of the list
are you? It was on the same site. It was the OpenJDK one. If you go look at it, it's just talking about a new package.
Remote method invocation?
Yeah. That's what it stands for. So let's take a glance over here at packetstormsecurity.com. I haven't used this one as extensively, so we'll just poke around and see what we've got. If I remember correctly, these guys actually maintain like a collection of malware. Technically, you can't. Well, I guess maybe you can download it. What? Packetstormsecurity.com. I didn't think you could download it anymore, but it looks like it might be. So this literally, what they go around doing is they say, hey, look, we found some malware. Let's get a copy of it and take a look at it, describe it, talk about it, and apparently you can download it, maybe. I don't know what exactly. Okay, it looks like you just can download descriptions. They used to actually let you download the malware, but they decided to stop that. The reality is if you want malware to analyze, you can go find it anyway. Sure, your only reason is to analyze it.
Why are you looking at me?
I wasn't looking at you. I was looking at everyone. I'm sure everyone's only desire would be to
analyze it.
Glad I'm not using Bankel Chat for Drupal. Or change for organic groups.
Well, don't they have decompiled versions of
malware? Probably not. Maybe reverse engineer. Decompiling is very expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive. Usually it requires manually reading assembly code and recreating the source, and that's hard.
I would like to see a decompiled version.
They've done some work on that, but the people who did it probably aren't putting it online. Mostly because they want to charge for stuff like that, because they're all commercial.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's see. Packet Storm tracks a bunch of different things. Like I said, I haven't looked at this very much, so we won't stay here for but a moment. So I don't really see much of interest here. I can't actually think of any more security. Has anyone else seen anything in security recently, security news that they think would be interesting to bring up?
There's the Java vulnerabilities.
Yeah, but those are constant. I mean, they're constant.
They had some zero-day exploit.
Again, constant. You know what one of the number one things recommended for securing your personal computer is?
Don't
Java. Install Java. Second top one is probably don't install Flash, but Java's actually managed to get to the top slot.
What?
Bravo.
Much, How much stuff on the internet would you not be able to use?
Anymore? Not very much.
What is it mostly now?
I almost never see it.
Isn't Java used by 3 billion plus?
Yeah, but as far as online tools go, I almost never see it. Or, like, web apps. Using Java for web apps is almost entirely died out because you can use Flash and you can use HTML5 for some of the stuff. So, I mean, I guess if you were playing, like, old games or something, it would be one thing, but I don't have time to play games like that. And honestly, if I did, I wouldn't play games like that. I'd play more interesting games. Now, there is a lot of software written in Java.
Right.
I don't really have a problem with it with Linux. I don't know how bad it is for Windows. Because it's been years since I've used
Windows. What do you use for your operating system, right?
Almost entirely. I have Windows, but I don't like it very much. Currently, Linux Mint, because I ran out of time to maintain.
Yeah, I'm using Mint right now. It's pretty good.
Yeah, considering for what it is. I mean, if I had time to tinker, it wouldn't be very good. But when I don't have time to tinker, Linux Mint is great. It's replaced Ubuntu in my book for that type of stuff. Which desktop manager did you install? Is that the GNOME 3 or GNOME 2 one? GNOME 2.4? Yeah, that's why I installed 2, because I love GNOME 2. They should never have gone away from it. All right, so are there any other security-related questions? Is there anything somebody wants to bring up?
Yeah,
here we go.
OpenDNS Resolver article from Computer World.
Hold on. Let's take a look.
Yeah, look up Computer World OpenDNS Resolvers increasingly abused.
So I think I did read something about this. It wasn't... Yeah, okay, so I did read something about this recently. I'll pull it up to make sure I'm right, but... okay, that didn't work. I guess... I need to find Computer World first.
Yeah.
Is it one word, Luke?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's...
Computerworld.com.
All right. I was just searching for it, so I didn't know how it was spelled. So, wait for the page to load. There we go. Open DNS. Well, if they have their page encrypted, why didn't they encrypt the Google results? Just go through...
It's like, you can't access this, it's encrypted.
No, what it is they've got a custom Google search.
Yeah.
Google search, you can do HTTPS searches through that. Now, Computer World is HTTPS, so when I did the Google search, because it's not, it warned me how I was about to send data over an encrypted channel. Why they didn't just use the encrypted version of Google, I don't know. Maybe you can't. I mean, maybe you can't. Maybe Google doesn't let you, but I would be surprised if that was the answer. Anyway, I have, I think, probably got, what's it called? EFF tool. It is HTTPS everywhere. I highly recommend installing that if you've got a browser that will support it. It forces HTTPS on every site that they know about. What's really cool is the Wikipedia logo. If you pull it up, have you ever noticed? They've got an HTTPS version, and it's the inverted colors. So the background is black and the foreground is white. I don't know why they don't... I don't know why sites aren't defaulting to HTTPS. Well, it's because of the server load, but the server load shouldn't be that significant if you've got a halfway decent server. So let me glance at this real quick. Okay, so this is not really specific to OpenDNS. I mean, they're giving DNS a bad rap because they can. They probably don't like OpenDNS.
Like it
may be more common with OpenDNS. So what's happening for everybody who hasn't followed... What's going on?
What I'm wondering is, why are these article writers, saying OpenDNS is bad? I don't understand.
Is it DNS, domain name servers?
It's the thing that lets you resolve domain names.
Okay. And OpenDNS is very nice because it makes domain names cheaper.
I
don't have to pay as much to do domain names, to have a domain name.
So,
as a matter of fact, you don't have to pay anything for a domain name. Really.
But
you could.
To register it?
Well, if you've got internet access...
No, you have to register your domain.
Okay.
Unless there's a service that I really wish I knew about and I don't. And if there is such a service, I want to know. No, I don't think so.
It's not expensive.
You can get it for like $1 at certain sites. Personally, I use Dreamhost. $10.
For Eugene Davis.
$10 for each version I bought.
Okay.
But In my opinion, it was worth paying the extra money because DreamHost is a lot more reputable than like GoDaddy.
Okay. Right. Those are what the top level domains.
Top level domain name is .com, .org, .net, right. Stuff like that. So I bought all the regular top level domain names.
I see. Okay.
So what's up with them attacking? Why are people attacking Odin?
They aren't attacking it. What it's doing is it's amplifying. So I'll explain the attack real quick.
Writers.
Let me explain the attack.
Okay.
And then, I mean, I'm guessing the reason why is it's just, it's really common in OpenDNS. What we've got is, here's our OpenDNS server. Let's not call that. Just our DNS server.
Or ONS.
No, that's a D. My D.
Okay.
D is a capital letter in my name. It's a stylized letter for me.
That's fine.
All right, so a regular computer sends a request over UDP, like port 54 or 64 or something like that, and it just asks, it's looking for my address, for instance.
gmdavis.net. Just the ASCII characters, pretty much, right?
There's some other stuff included, but that's part of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so DNS sends back. So this is step one. DNS sends back in step two the IP address. So this would be
it in these users.
So it sends it back.
Right.
So let's come over
here. So now the computer has an IP address to tie to that.
So this is if it's honest. So one of the things it sends in this case is also the IP address. So this is my IP address being 207 whatever dot dot dot, right? So that's included. So that's how I get my response back, right? So if I remember this attack correctly, what it is here's our DNS server again. And here's our attacker. All right, so they're asking for, let's say, my address. And their address is 301 dot dot dot. And they're sending for the resolve address 230 dot dot dot, right? Okay, so it doesn't know who to send this to anymore. This is step one.
So it sends a response to the wrong person.
Yep.
To 230.
The victim is 230 dot dot dot. Alright, okay, no big deal, right?
Because they're just getting,
right?
An IP address, right?
But imagine if I had a botnet,
receiving one.
Yeah, and so, but imagine if I had a botnet, so I had, 50 computers, and I sent, 1,000 of these domain name requests per second. So,
just a random people.
50 times 1,000, right? So, 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the victim may very well get hammered. You may just consume all of my bandwidth. Now, I think that's what they're doing. So, probably the reason why they're specifically attacking DNS is probably what's going on is OpenDNS. OpenDNS is probably the most common one. In fact, I see here it is exactly what I just described. So, OpenDNS is probably the most common one that's misconfigured like that. So they're saying, OpenDNS is bad. But I'm almost certain there are other DNS servers that can do that. It's just one of those things. I mean,
it's a misunderstanding in the article writers between.
I see they're blaming DNSSEC too.
Yeah, see.
Because with DNSSEC it means it's a bigger package. Packet.
Oh.
I think. Although done correctly, you could probably fix this entire issue, but DOS attacks are hard to deal with. So let's see real quick. Yeah, any sort of DOS attack, usually there's not much you can do other than, there's usually a few things, but in the end, it means maybe you buy more bandwidth, maybe you talk to your ISP and they block it before it ever gets to you, but pretty much no matter what happens, if there's enough computers trying to attack you, you're going down. If it's just DOS, that is. You're almost certain to go down. Because if, and you know where the real fault for that lies, though? Come on, anyone can answer. Why are botnets so prevalent?
Oh, because people don't care about getting rid of viruses on their computers.
People don't secure their computers, exactly. So, yeah, it looks like that's just... Let's
see. Well, when you're talking about now, sure, you're talking about companies.
Well, with denial of service, what it usually is happening is, say, a home user, Bob, doesn't care about running antivirus because he doesn't think it matters. He's like, I don't have anything that I care about if get stolen. You know, he's not like Luke, who has to protect his lasers.
Exactly.
Because he's planning to take over the world with them. Sorry, I just making that joke every time. So he doesn't secure his computer. He gets infected. Well, because there's, you know, how many people on the internet right now? I mean, I know there's supposed to be like 1 billion Facebook users, which implies there's probably like 2 or 3 billion devices. So let's assume that 20% of those people, just 20% of those people, don't secure their computers. It's probably more than that, sadly. So I, as a attacker, I go write a virus. I go write a worm, especially, and it propagates throughout the internet, and it sets a botnet up, and just absolutely hammers anyone I want as a result. Because let's say I only get 1,000 computers. 1,000 computers is more than enough to attack most networks. Most servers. I mean, okay, yeah, they're supposed to be able to support, you know, thousands within a few minutes, but if simultaneously 1,000 hits come in like within a few seconds, I can't support that. I can't.
Set up your firewall to...
Well, remember though, the firewall, now if the ISP configures it, maybe. Unfortunately, a firewall, unless it's running on the ISP, a firewall still has the same problem. You can only filter those packets after they've hit your network. You know, you have to wait till they hit your firewall. So at that point, because that's on your network, you know, let me draw it again. It's easier to draw it. It's easier to keep track of it than I remember what I was drawing on, because I'm probably going to upload this. So, you know, here's the incoming. Here's our network barrier. Yeah, here's our firewall. And, you know, that goes out to all sorts of little computers. Well, actually, it'll probably go out to a router. Depends on where the firewall is. So, this bandwidth right here, this incoming Ethernet line, or whatever, it's probably not Ethernet. It's probably like into like T1, but it doesn't really matter. It's still going to get hammered. If I can't fit any more bytes on there, or any more bits, is how I should say, I can't fit any more bits on there. I mean, just plain and simple. What can you do?
It's going to get filled up.
And if you've got too many people hitting you, even if you've got big enough bandwidth, your firewall may not be able to keep up.
What do most servers do when they're confronted with
they change their IP address?
Really? If they can, you can't always react that fast. Sometimes that...
Well, you can't react that fast, but I'm saying over the long run. He's saying like long run.
Oh, over the long run, the attack probably stops.
Could the defense come at the ISP?
Yes, if the ISP over here...
Then they've got, the MSP? You got the ISP, and then you got one above that. That service for the status.
Yeah, probably.
I can't remember. It's got a master service.
Some of them are probably combined, which is why I don't know off the top of my head. At any rate, so let's just say right here, they've got a firewall. This is a weird picture, but... At any rate, so here's the attacker. Well, it'll probably be separate.
Well, actually, that's also a bigger picture issue, because I've read a lot of stuff where people are saying that as ISPs, they are effectively providing firewalls against things like conflict.
You're right. Hold on, let me say you're right, but I want to finish all I'm thinking. So if they all come here and they hit a firewall, yes, it can be blocked. Now, the thing to keep in mind is, too, the ISP can get overwhelmed, too.
Yeah.
And if the ISP goes down, you still got DOS.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But no, you're right. And that is the place to do it. Honestly, a lot of ISPs don't do that.
Yeah.
And honestly, we probably don't want them to, because it means that they're doing DPI on it. Sorry, deep packet inspection. I know somebody's going to take that one.
Alright, and what were you about to say?
Well, there's certain ways, I mean, you don't have to necessarily do deep packet inspection, but I think they've found hashes.
You can do traffic tape.
Well, yeah. In any case, if they have a hash for a given packet structure of something they know is coming from a botnet, then that hash can be handed out to all ISPs.
So,
and the ISPs can block that.
Most botnets, when they're doing an attack like this, don't use anything special. It's a regular packet. There's just a lot of them. Now, there are DOS attacks, not distributed usually. Mm-hmm. Usually they're just DOS attacks that use a specific type of packet.
Right.
Like they do some weird fragmentation, or they use what's called the ping of death. I can't go into the technical details off the top of my head. I mean, we could look it up if you guys want.
Well, then you reduce another type of DOS attack down to not being a DDoS attack. That can really save the server a lot.
Aren't those going down in popularity, the old DOS attacks?
No. Actually, very recently, the FBI themselves got hit by the DDoS.
I think they're pretty much, I mean, they're probably increasing overall, but if you were to adjust based on the time, it's probably an expected increase. So, I mean, the bigger the botnets get and the cheaper it is to get time on a botnet, the more...
Our computer probably has one thing.
I'm just going to do that time one.
That's part of it, but for instance, obviously, like, political reasons, right?
Yeah.
If I don't like your government, I might take you down. If I don't like the services your company's
providing.
Yeah,
well, China, China's...
But,
China, North Korea, and Iran are attacking us. Like,
I think more interesting, too, is, like, corporate environments, right? If I decide, hey, I want to take my competitor down, that's a big business advantage for me, right? So I take my competitor down and...
Well, one of the things that I find extremely interesting that I think, you know, I'm not giving anything away since everybody here is the regular numbers, Conficker is, as of 2011, 1.7 million computers.
Conficker's all over the place. I remember that because I remember when they were making a big deal over.
Whoever made Conficker is still out
there. Yeah, but
they can still give updates to Conficker.
Except I believe they reverse engineered the code protection, and now if you've got antivirus, it's probably gone. So when was that statistic taken?
2011.
I think 2011 was back when it was still new, right? When did Conficker originate?
2008.
Never mind. No, 2011 was when the original date that they were worried about was or something.
Yeah,
anyway,
they were worried it was going to go active.
I mean, they had reverse engineered it and they fixed that hole, so if you're sensible, it's gone anyway. But yeah, there's unfortunately a lot of very unsensible people who do not run antiviruses. They don't run firewalls, they don't keep patches up to date.
Do you know how much...
Thank you.
Do you know how much, like, information retrieval is integrated with security, let's say, in terms of research?
What do you mean when you say information
retrieval?
Information
retrieval. I mean, like, looking, let's say, at a website and being able to pick out kind of important links and little kind of routes.
Are you thinking of... Are you talking about data mining?
Yeah.
Web crawling?
Data mining.
Okay, how are you thinking... Well, I mean, the answer is usually going to be yes, because if it's on a computer, usually in some way, shape, or another, that was an interesting combination.
Even web crawl to it.
But what are you thinking about? Why do you ask that question?
I just think it's interesting. Let's say maybe there's a lot of it. I mean, I guess there's a lot of research performed in both security and information retrieval. And I guess, like, I've never heard of anything about using information retrieval to do attacks or to prevent attacks.
Well, more like, well, actually, yes, there are a number of ways to use web crawlers to do reconnaissance for an attack. In fact, I don't know if we covered that or not, but that might be on the pen testing slides I've already got. If not, I'll probably speak to it a bit. Because what you can do is you can go, let's say I target a crawler on a corporate website, and I just go tell it to look for files and look for, say, a password or employees and stuff like that. So it goes and retrieves the names of people. It retrieves files. So say it finds an internal document that somebody left
accidentally on a
server. It brings that back to me. Maybe that reveals to me useful information. The flip side of that is defending against that type of stuff. So data mining is actually kind of getting nasty. There's the whole tracking thing, right, where they track everything they can about what you do on the web.
Right.
So in that respect, security would be about making sure that it's hard to track a user. And there's a lot of different ways to do that as well. So usually that boils down to attempting to hide in the noise, but there are other mechanisms you can use as well.
Right. I see. So that would be like just a script that you run on a website to get final files.
Well, you wouldn't run it on the website. You would run it from your computer and target the website. Yeah, that's what I figured you meant, but I wanted to clarify.
Exactly.